I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome to the Dave Sinclair, Lincoln and Ford Sports on a Sunday morning.
Here's the pitch. A swing and a high fly ball.
This could be trouble. It's at the wall.
And it's a gunner!
He scores!
Now, Sports on a Sunday morning on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Sports on a Sunday morning. I'm Mike Claiborne. We're here at the ballpark. And we're getting set for the final game for this season's first portion of the season as the Cardinals and the New York Mets will do battle one more time. What a fun game we had yesterday as the Cardinals defeated the New York Mets by a score of 5-3. Paul DeJong was the story, four extra base hits, including a home run. The Cardinals fine Adam Wainwright with a record of 10-5. That's right, 10-5, considering the start that he had. It's been an incredible run so far. A win today, and it puts the Cardinals just two games under 500. As they go into the All-Star break, so we'll see how things unfold. It'll be Lance Lynn today. He's 6-6, and he'll deal with Steven Matz, who has a 2-1 record, but an ERA of 2.12. So it should be quite interesting, as both teams want to obviously finish strong going into the break. Let's tell you a little bit about the standings in the National League. In case you haven't heard, the Milwaukee Brewers are on top. They have a 4.5 game lead over the Chicago Cubs. The Cardinals are a game behind the Cubs. And then you have Pittsburgh and Cincinnati. But Milwaukee is a team that I guess we're going to have to start paying attention to. They've won 8 of their last 10, and that's saying something about them. Only them and the Cardinals have a plus record over the last 10 games. So we'll see how things will unfold as the Milwaukee Brewers. Like a lot of teams, when you think about where they're at in the standings, I think there are a lot of teams that still don't know whether they're buyers or sellers or not. And when you look at some of the bad records and some of the bad records of teams that have good players, this could be quite interesting down the stretch. And I think when you see one team make a move, then perhaps the domino effect will come into play. We'll talk with John Mozeliak a little later in the show about what he sees down the road, not only for the Cardinals, but certainly in Major League Baseball. We mentioned the All-Star game. It comes up on Tuesday night. You got Home Run Derby tomorrow if you're interested in that. But the All-Star game will feature Carlos Martinez and Yadier Molina from the St. Louis Cardinals. Terry Francona, good news, he's out of the hospital, and he won't participate in the All-Star game, but he should be available for duty later in the week. So good news on that front from Terry Francona, as he had a heart procedure over the last couple of days, so hopefully things will continue to go well for him. As a matter of fact, his team is playing well also. So we'll run down the standings on the leaders in each division. You know, Washington is leading the division in the East. Although Atlanta's trying to make a little bit of a run, you also have in the Western Division, that's a fun division because the Dodgers are 60-29. I'm going to say that again. We're at the All-Star break, and they're 31 games over 500, and they only have a 6.5 game lead over the Arizona Diamondbacks. Colorado slipped a little bit. They're 9 games off the pace, but in very good shape with regard to the wild card. And I think it's a little early to start talking wild card, to be honest with you. But we'll see how things develop on that front. Over in the East, in the West, in the American League, Boston has a 3.5 game over the Yankees. The Yankees just are really struggling, although they won yesterday against the Milwaukee Brewers. Tampa Bay, well, they're still in it. They're 3 games over. They're 4.5 back. Baltimore's 8.5 back. They're under 500. And when you look in the Central Division, Cleveland has a 2.5 game lead over Minnesota. That's right, Minnesota. But how about Kansas City? Kansas City got off to a horrible start. They find themselves 2 games over 500. They're 3 games out of first place in their division. Chicago's 9 off the pace. And Houston's 30 games over 500 as well, folks. They have a 15.5 game lead over the Texas Rangers. And, oh, by the way, they're the only team in that division with a record of 500 or better. So that just kind of gives you an indication of where baseball is headed. A lot of teams at or under 500. In the game right now, and I'm not sure if there's a specific reason about it, but maybe we'll get one from Mike Matheny or John Mozeliak. Speaking of Mike Matheny, he's our guest. The Mike Matheny Show comes your way here in just a bit. But before we get out of here for that, there's an interesting item that's taking place, and I'm sure you've heard about this money that's being thrown around in the NBA these days, where Steph Curry is making $40 million a year, James Harden is going to sign a deal that's more than $40 million. And when you look at the combination of just those two players, that's more than the combined payroll of the San Diego Padres. So there's a lot of money floating around the NBA, and I know some will say, well, why? They're starting a 9-year, $24 billion TV contract. Now you say to yourself, well, that means they're going to sell a lot of advertising. And they will, but they are banking on the international market. You have to remember, the NBA has been a leader in this country as far as branding its sport around the world, and they're going to roll the dice with Europe and certainly China, and they feel like this is going to be a good venture for them, and they have no problem spreading the wealth considering the players get 51% of the income. So there you have a little NBA education for you this morning here on KMOX. Stand by. Mike Matheny comes up next on the Mike Matheny Show on your voice for the Cardinals, KMOX.
Welcome to the Saipaw GM Country Mike Matheny Show, sponsored by Saipaw GM Country, where everybody leaves happy, on your home for best Cardinals coverage, KMOX.
Welcome back, everybody. 10:17 here in St. Louis. I'm Mike Claiborne, and it's time now for the Mike Matheny Show here on KMOX. Mike, good morning. I think he's there.
I'm here.
Okay. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good, Mike.
Well, let's talk a little bit about yesterday. A clean game with regard to your play. Paul DeJong had a career day, but overall, it was a fun game to watch because you were doing a lot of things, running the bases. I know you lost a couple of guys, but overall, it was an entertaining game because everybody had a chance to get involved, your bench, your bullpen, and certainly your starters.
Yeah, it was great to see the Waino, you know, set the tone, and what our starters do for us is so important. And then to see our guys at the back end of the pen get some heat put on them in tough spots and then come through and be able to get it done. But, yeah, the guys took some aggressive challenges early on and didn't work out, but they kept going, kept looking for those opportunities, and then we'd give them the green light and take advantage of it and ended up paying off for us.
It's a high-risk, high-reward situation at times, and I noticed that when Pham was thrown out stealing a base, there he was when he got back on base going after another bag. So you guys didn't pull in the reins at all, and I think that I'm sure players appreciate it and certainly the fans do as well, especially when you get good results.
Yeah, well, you know, you hate making outs on the bases, and especially when it is the stolen base. And at one point, we'd given up three on the bases, and you start to have that tendency to shut things down. But, you know, when everything's pointing in a positive direction, and Mike, we've talked about this before, we compute everything. We put it all in. We talk about where we are in the game, what the situation is. And then we start looking at the times of the pitchers, and we start thinking about the situation with who's behind the plate and is there something we can take advantage of here. But guys like Yadier Molina, his success rate when he steals is so high because he takes and puts so many things into it. He knows the counts that they're probably going to throw a slower breaking ball. He has an idea when they even may be trying to throw it in the dirt. He has a pitcher timed up and thinks that he's got him kind of taking him for granted, and all those things go into it. And is this a good time to make a try? And when those opportunities pop up, they can be game changers, even though it is hard to swallow when it doesn't work out.
Adam Wainwright is 10-5, and that's something that when you saw the beginning of the season, you were wondering if he was going to get to 10, period. What has been the biggest difference in his approach, or has anything changed with – I would say his approach may not have changed, but he's done something different that has given him the success that he has now.
Well, I'm going to correct you. You said you didn't think he was going to get 10. That wasn't me. That might have been a whole lot of other people, but I never doubt this guy. I never know what he's going to be able to do. And you know, he's obviously been a beneficiary of good offense at times. He's been he's had the bullpen come in and pick him up a number of times also to help get those wins. And I know that the analytics folks in the game don't appreciate the win as much as we do, but that's truly the bottom line. And you can't completely disregard the fact that man, these guys, they play real hard for him. And you can tell because he's such a giver inside this clubhouse to always trying to make people better. Not the guys are playing harder one time or another, but you always heard those sayings, hey, this guy, I'll run through a wall for that guy. And that's Adam Wainwright for our club. And, you know, he goes out there and continues to figure out ways to compete and keep us in a game. And yesterday, I think it was just a real good sign of the kind of pitching that he can do for a long time, Mike. He wasn't trying to hit 95. He was taking 88 to 91 and putting it where he wanted to. He was taking speed off the breaking ball. He was changing that cutter into a slider, just kind of manipulating pitches. And that's something that he should be able to do for as long as he wants to play this game.
Yeah, that's an interesting point you make. He didn't try and overpower the hitters. And we see a lot of good pitchers who don't have 95 and 96, but if they spot their pitches, that's just as hard as trying to hit a four-seam fastball at 98 miles an hour.
Well, you know, you have very few of those kind of talents that can locate and have the velocity and the movement all at the same time. That's what makes Carlos Martinez so good when he's right, or we just saw Max Scherzer. What makes him special is the fact that he has the high temperature, and he also can put it wherever he wants to. But to us, it's always going to come down to location, 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 and being able to use multiple pitches. And Adam, we've talked about him being a field pitcher, and you could tell early on he had the feel for that hook. And from the side, it looked like it was just falling off the end of the table. He'd pull a little more off it, throw it in the low 70s, high 60s. Put a little bit more on it. He was breaking it side to side. But yesterday, I really believe, was a story of him effectively using his fastball. He had, I can think of eight different outs that he had where he had them thinking about the other, either the slider cutter or the curveball, and he was finishing them off. But he also got some early swings in the count, too, with some pop-ups. I thought it was just a great job of kind of going back and forth and speeding the hitter up and slowing him down. That's exactly what pitchers need to do.
Why don't we see that more? Because baseball players are creatures of habit, especially hitters, and they look for certain things at a certain time, and normally they're more guessers than anything else. But we don't see enough pitchers, and you mentioned Adam, and I think he's one of them, that has no problem changing the script. Why don't we see more pitchers do that?
I think it's changing even at the lower levels. You're watching how even these college coaches are going out and they're just going for horsepower. And so every night our guys are getting very accustomed to seeing 95, 96, which, you know, even 15 years ago, you might have one guy on your staff with that kind of velocity. Now it's every guy that's coming out of the bullpen's throwing that hard. So our players are used to seeing it. And I think it's just what's a little bit different. And what is a little bit different is a guy who can put a little bit more movement and even take a little bit of speed off on purpose because they know it's that much different than what everybody else in the league is doing. And I think it just takes a level of confidence too, where and Adam has had to do that. And we talk about the transition over time. You know, he's a guy who's always been a hard thrower, and I think he had to be able to see it firsthand against some very good hitters that, hey, if I take off a little bit here and just put the movement on and start to stretch the plate and I'm making really fine pitches on the corners, I'm going to have a lot of success. And then once you see that, then you begin to trust it, and then you can roll.
For you, I'm going to go back to your playing days for a minute. As a catcher, were you in that position where there was a guy who, if he would do that, and maybe you had to push him a little bit to throw it because he lacked confidence, do you have to have more confidence maybe than the pitcher does when it comes to those sort of pitches?
Yeah, I think it goes hand in hand, and I think it's continued to explain to guys, hey, here's what we're seeing, here's what you're doing, and it does happen with every single pitcher. I mean, you're eventually going to lose your velocity. It's just part of the gig. It's a short shelf life with this, and it gets to the point of, okay, I'm going to have to go from a thrower to a pitcher, and you just name whichever guy is able to stay in this league over 10 years. At that point, there has to be a change in their philosophy of how they go about pitching, and it just has to be something either they trust or they don't. And some guys just keep trying to heave as hard as they can, and that normally brings them to the middle of the plate. And hitters in this league, they just don't miss those pitches very often. And it takes a lot of guts. I mean, you watch. I thought one of the best. And I didn't even catch him that much, but one of the best examples was probably watching Bartolo Colon. I remember facing him in Cleveland when he was a 98 mile an hour pitcher, and then we're watching him as early as even last year, and even times this year, where he's out there still getting guys out because he's putting better movement on, but he knows exactly what he's trying to do with the ball as far as where he's putting it on the plate and taking advantage of hitters' aggressiveness. It's impressive to watch when you can see guys transform their thought process as much as what they're doing physically.
Now, with that said, the veteran pitchers seem to be a little bit more efficient with their pitches, but we have a lot of guys in baseball that can throw four, maybe five pitches for strikes. Hence, they want to show everybody what they have in the kitchen. Do you think that is one of the issues when we have high pitch counts because guys want to throw everything and sometimes they can't get it over strikes when they think they should?
I think that's part of it. I think also the strikeout is overrated. And I know, once again, the analytics guys are going to fight you on that because that's one of those things that's a real good indicator of how a guy is progressing is their strikeout and walk rates. But I also know the effectiveness of watching a guy like a Mike Leake who can go out there and can challenge guys in the bottom of the zone and can get early outs. I mean, that's truly the transition you've seen with Carlos Martinez. That's kind of that model. And we've seen him on that really good run is the model of, okay, I need a quick out here, and I know I can go to this guy's weakness and get a ground ball in the first two pitches. And then when he gets into that bind, he still has the stuff, which you're talking about those other pitches in his repertoire where he can get the strikeout. I also believe that so many young pitchers love having all the different pitches and the array that, you know, they're a master of none. And then they get into a spot where one pitch begins to morph into the other, where all of a sudden they have a real good curveball, but they want to mix in a slider, and next thing you know, they have a slurve, and neither one of them are very sharp.
Cardinal manager Mike Matheny is our guest on the Mike Matheny Show. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more after we take this time out.
Now, back to the Safe GM Country Mike Matheny Show. Sponsored by Safe GM Country, where everybody leaves happy. On your home for best Cardinals coverage, KMOX.
Welcome back, everybody. It is 10:32 on a Sunday morning as Mike Matheny is with us. And Mike, we're at the All-Star break. One game today, and then everybody takes a break. I want to get your thought on, as you broke camp in spring training to where you're at now, aside from the record, what have you found to be the most improvement, and what are some of the concerns that you have as you look back on how you drew it up in the spring?
Well, I think improvement is some of these young players who are stepping in. We didn't necessarily have, let's take Tommy Pham, who didn't make our team out of the spring, and now is one of the most impactful bats, and defensively what Tommy's done this year has been a terrific surprise for us. And then you add in Paul DeJong and what he's been able to do, and you talked about the game that he had yesterday, but what an incredible 130 or 40 at-bats he's had, as well as what he's done defensively. Yeah, that's been a bonus. And Luke Voit being able to step in, another guy that wasn't even invited to spring camp with us. And then just different guys stepping in, like a John Brebbia. Those sort of things, you know, every year somebody's going to have to do it. But these are some guys that maybe weren't on the immediate radar who've stepped in. I see us improving defensively. That was one of the things we wanted to talk about, some consistency in the outfield and the infield. Overall, I think this is a team that's improved base running-wise, and I think we have some statistics that would reinforce that. So we're seeing small improvements, but things that we're talking about, Mike, they just take time. They're things that you just can't improve overnight. Guys are putting in the time with the extra work defensively and on the bases. But what it comes down to is you look at some of the tough runs we've had this season. It's been either a lack of offense, which was at the beginning of the season, or it was, you know, a period where the starting pitching was kind of a little less than what we were hoping for. But we also saw an incredible start with our starting pitching. The way they came out of the gates was better than anybody in baseball. So I think we're seeing some of those pieces come together and putting together the back end of our bullpen. And games like last night reinforced the fact that we have the arms that can do that.
You touched on defense, and anybody who saw you play knew that you were a very good defender. Where does defense start? Is it focus? Is it effort? Because everybody's got physical skills when you get to the big leagues, but where does it start, and what's the area that you want to try and stress even more to players on being even better defenders?
Well, it starts with talent. And, you know, we have to have guys who have the ability, whether it's the hand-eye coordination or just the quickness, that first step quickness. And, you know, we have a pretty good idea before a guy gets here kind of what his limitations are. And for us to be able to have guys in the outfield that can cover ground, that have good instincts and jumps, guys in the infield that have the hands to be able to make a play. And then once we establish that, and you would think, okay, that has to happen or they never even get to the big leagues, which isn't necessarily true. We have guys here that we know they're going to be limited in what they're going to be able to do defensively. And then it comes down to, are these things that are able to be improved upon? And the answer is most often, yeah. And so we keep trying to push the envelope with that. But once we kind of know what their skill set is, then it comes down to, just like everything else in this game, is confidence. And then getting them the kind of work to where they're making those progressive steps forward. It's amazing, Mike, that guys that do get to this level, they fall into the same trap as everybody else, and that fear of making a mistake. And usually how that is overcome is the work. And it is slow and it's methodical. There has to be a plan in place to help them get to that point to where they become, where I call it like a Jack Russell Terrier. They see a ball and they can't wait to go get it. And we have guys that are making those steps forward and taking some of those talents and trying to push it to a new level.
That's my problem. I don't have a Jack Russell Terrier. That's, now I know why my dogs don't go for the ball. You just hit the nail on the head there. Hey, yeah. You know, when you talk about defenders in the outfield, have you managed four guys who can cover, as well as when you look at Grichuk, Piscotty, Pham, and Fowler?
Yeah, I mean, you're potentially looking at four center fielders, which is great to have. I mean, you watch an outfield like Pittsburgh, kind of the same thing when they have their three out there with a Marte, and you're looking at Polanco's coming along and McCutchen. I mean, those guys are going to cover a whole lot of ground, and I think that's the kind of defense that we have, except there's four guys out there. I'm watching how Stevens improving in right field and making some great throws. Oh, what a great, terrific throw Grich had the other day too, and guys that not just can run balls down but also throw very accurately to take away that extra base. This is one of the better outfields that we've seen here in a while.
Cardinal manager Mike Matheny, it's the Mike Matheny Show. We'll take a break, we'll come back, and we'll find out what the All-Star plans are going to be like after we take this time out.
Now, back to the Safe GM Country Mike Matheny Show. Sponsored by Safe GM Country, where everybody leaves happy. On your home for best Cardinals coverage, KMOX.
Welcome back, everybody. 10:42 on a Sunday morning in the Mike Matheny Show. Mike, the All-Star break is here. It seems like today players, managers, and coaches cherish this time more than maybe in the past. So for you, when do you shut it down and get away from this, because everybody's got to recharge the battery?
Yeah, it's amazing that 4 days seems like a whole summer break from school. But, you know, we start thinking about it when this game ends. So it's important for our guys to recharge. And most guys are heading home or heading somewhere. A few guys heading down to a lake and, you know, just kind of trying to unwind and make sure that they're investing into family. But more important than anything else is giving their body a little chance to recoup.
For you, how do you approach it? I mean, are you writing lineups down on napkins while you're taking this break, or do you just step away from it for a day or two before you have to refocus?
No, I'll be in touch with Mo and Gersh, and we'll be talking through the break. I'm sure I'll be throwing some batting practice, as I got a couple at home still that are ball players, so there'll be some of that going on. But I'll be investing into my family for sure, sitting by a pool somewhere and you know, unwinding as best we can. But you know, there's always something going on, and you know, there's still moves to be made. We got guys coming off the DL. We got guys that we're trying to get right and trying to put together a good strong push here for this second half and put the kind of finish on that we should.
It's a pleasant dilemma for you, because you're going to have some guys that are going to come off the disabled list that are going to be looking for playing time. So for you, how are you going to try and structure this where you'd like to have a set lineup, but you have some guys who have earned the opportunity to play, and you've got to find guys who come off the injury list to be able to have a chance to play as well. So how's that going to work?
Yeah, I mean, it's a challenge. We're talking about the same thing with the outfield, with what we have right now. You got four guys, as we talked about, could all probably play center field, and Dex comes off, and Pham's been hot, and when Grich came back from AAA, he looked as good as anybody, and Stephen Piscotty's been a consistent contributor. So, I mean, there's always that challenge of how to find enough playing time for everybody, and I think when you have a Colton Wong come back, the same challenge is going to happen. How do you keep the other guys engaged and everybody sharp and able to contribute? And those are good problems to have, but can be problems when you're just trying to keep guys happy and keep them sharp.
Yeah, and sometimes You're not going to be happy. That's how this business works, where you want to play. And I think you'd like to have players who have the emotion to say, I want to play, but there's a fine line of also being a professional.
Yeah, and they get it. I mean, I think it comes down to, in the end, they understand that we're going to have to do what's best for the club. But while things are going on, I mean, it's never easy not seeing your name in there when you feel like you should be the guy. So it's just I believe in over-communicating in those situations and constantly talking to them, even when they don't want to hear from me. Just let them know what we're thinking and where we see them playing, just so they can kind of be prepared for when that opportunity does come. They're not surprised, but understand their role on the bench and how valuable that can be on the nights when they're not going to get the start.
How often do you talk to the team as a whole squad during the season? I know in spring training you have your opening meeting. Do you revisit them or revisit situations after the break or before the break?
You know, I try to do it as little as possible, and we've had some seasons. You know, I think of our 100-win season, I didn't have to have a team meeting until mid-August, and just something didn't look right. The guys have been doing a great job over the years of being able to right the ship. You know, we've had our number of meetings this year, though. I mean, there's just been times when it hasn't looked right. You can kind of sense that we need a little bit of a recharge, or at least something brought to the forefront. But for the most part, the big team meeting, with what we do and how we do it every single day, if you can overdo that for sure. But we have meetings, you realize, every series. So I'll have the pitchers all together that I'll be in. If there's a message that they need, they're going to hear that message. And then we have the hitters for every series. So we're talking, you know, 2-3 times a week that we're getting together. So there's always that opportunity if a message needs to be shared. But as far as bringing the guys in and having the Newt Rockne speech in front of the whole clubhouse, I mean, that's not happening that often, and only when absolutely necessary.
How many times were you in a clubhouse where somebody wanted to be Newt Rockne?
Plenty. Yeah, we've had plenty.
How often did it work?
Not very often. But, yeah, it's all kinds of stuff. I saw the food spread flipped over one time, and saw stuff thrown across the room, and yeah, all kinds of different tirades. I guess, you know, when you get into those spots, you just try almost anything, and if what you've been doing hasn't been working, why not try something else? So I haven't been flipping any food tables over or anything, but you know, we've had some good conversations, and the guys have had theirs too. And I think those are actually the ones that are even more important when you get the leadership core of the team going in, and the guys who've won have had a lot of individual and collective success, and go in and say, all right, listen, guys, this isn't what it looks like, and we need to fix this in a hurry.
The infusion of youth on this ball club has been interesting. We touched on it a little earlier. But one of the things that I noticed, and with your coaches, they're still working with these guys well before the gates open on the little things in order to make sure they are better as a player in the big leagues compared to just feeling like, well, I'm here, I don't have to do this anymore.
Yeah, I think you're right, Mike. And I know the fact that this staff has put on more of the coaching and teaching hat this season, maybe more than ever before. I think one is part of the youth, and two is part of the inconsistency. We just committed to the fact when things aren't right, we teach more. And, you know, that's what we love to do. Coaching and teaching, I believe, are synonymous, and constantly talking about the game and you know, trying to make sure these guys have thick skin when we start getting a group together early and say, hey, listen, here's something that happened. It's not to run somebody down, but it's a teaching, it's a learning opportunity, and let's try not to make these mistakes again, but these are the things that we need to improve on. And I just think being able to consistently have that rapport and touching base, and, you know, you watch our club right now, we're doing things that we haven't done in a long time. You're seeing us do more fielding practice with our pitchers. You see us doing infield extra work, maybe as much as anybody. You see base running that's happening early, and I don't think there's any other team in the league that's doing that. And it's not that we're trying to outwork anybody. There are areas that we need to improve on, and so we're committed to the fact that if they need to be improved on, we better be working on them. And the guys are they're buying in, and I think they're starting to feel some of the confidence that comes with the extra work that they're doing.
What's important right now for you? Is it getting to 500? Because that seems like that's a starting point. And as we look around baseball, there's so many teams that are at or under 500, which basically leaves the door open for you and your ball club to really make a statement, especially in your own division.
Yeah, and I'm really fighting that urge to even check out standings. I truly buy into it, and people get tired of me saying it, but it's the truth and the fact that we just focus on playing good baseball. And I believe when we're clean, when we play a clean game, you're going to see the results, and then we can look back and the standings are where the standings are supposed to be. But I think you can get too confused, and I think you muddy the water, and you get away from what you can control when you're watching the standings or even your own record, because the record doesn't always tell the whole story either. But I do believe that if we just go about our business the right way, you know, those things take care of themselves. And we've had some really good hints of the kind of team that we can be and the different pieces that need to be in place. And I think that needs to be our focus, and the other stuff will be there.
New York Mets not included. Who was the best team you faced in the first portion of the season?
I think every team that we've run into has had that little bit of a shine of being very good. I think there's a couple teams obviously out west that are, you look at LA is 30 games over right now. We say don't pay attention to record, but that's pretty impressive. And that Arizona team's better. We ran into a pretty hot Colorado team. All three of those teams have shown that they're legit, but you can't rule out any club. We're talking just barely over halfway and a long way to go, and any team can make some moves that all of a sudden turns them into major contenders. So we don't downplay, or we don't give any other team that much credit either, but there's some teams that have got off to a good start.
For you in the second portion of the season, we talked a little bit about the lineup. Are you still tinkering with maybe the three spot, because we've seen a lot of different players come in and out of that position? Is that the one spot in the order that you feel like you'd like to have more consistency in?
Well, I'd like to have consistency with all eight and just be able to throw eight guys in there every single day. But we know that that's not the nature of the game. And guys get beat down and worn down, and someone else is going to have to step up, and somebody gets hurt, and it's going to be a different responsibility. But, there's psychology into certain spots in the order, and certain guys just don't statistically play well in certain places. So right now I think we've got a nice feel with Carp at the top, and we're going to have Dex in there again in the third spot today, which leaves opportunity for two and some of the spots on the bottom. So we just don't get maybe as caught up as everybody else does on those different spots and what each means. We know that any particular spot, like Paul DeJong yesterday in the eighth spot, could be one of the biggest places in the game. And so take advantage of those opportunities no matter where you are.
That's interesting. We bring up DeJong. That position, the eighth spot, whether it's DeJong and maybe when Wong comes back, he assumes that spot, that could be a very potent spot for your ball club in the second portion of the season.
Yeah, and it can be a tough place to hit if guys – they can overthink it. We're thinking that, they're going to pitch around me. Next thing you know, they've taken two strikes and get themselves into a disadvantaged count. But Paul's been taking good aggressive at-bats there. We saw Colton have some of the most effective at-bats in the season playing or hitting out of that eighth spot. And then it creates an opportunity, regardless of what the pitcher does, to roll that lineup around. And you got a guy like a Matt Carpenter sitting at the top with guys on base. So it's like we said, we do want and understand to have some of our best hitters up there more often and get them in those top spots. But those bottom ones can be just as meaningful and can have more guys on base and opportunity to change the game.
As we wrap up things with Mike Matheny, I know you got two of your players that are going to participate in the All-Star game. So will you shut everything down to watch it, or will you record it and watch it later?
Yeah, I'll probably just go through and watch my guys.
And then after that, it's like going to something else, right?
Yeah, we got lots of baseball to watch, and I'll be watching my own kids. But, yeah, we'll record it and see some of the highlights and see how Yadi and Carlos do.
Good enough. Mike, as always, it's good to visit with you on a Sunday morning. Let's have some fun this afternoon. And also enjoy the All-Star break, because it's your term, it's a grind this season. And for you and your coaches to step away from it for a minute and take a deep breath is something I'm sure they'll cherish as well.
Yeah, thank you, Mike. Appreciate it. Take care.
All right, you too. All right, that's Mike Matheny, Cardinal Manager. This has been the Mike Matheny Show. Coming up in the next hour, we'll hear from John Mozeliak, Cardinal President, get his thoughts on his ball club as we arrive at the All-Star break. Also, we'll hear from Kyle McClellan. Kyle McClellan is involved in a very fun venture in Cooperstown. Yeah, he's at the Hall of Fame, but he's not in the Hall of Fame, in case you're wondering. We'll hear from him. We have a few other things in store for you, so we invite you to stick around as we have a lot of things leading up to Cardinal baseball this afternoon. Alex Ferrario with the Ameren pregame show, followed with Mike Shannon and John Rooney with the play-by-play. It'll be Lance Lynn going to the mound for the Cardinals this afternoon. Lance Lynn looking to get over 500 before the break. And Steven Matz for the New York Mets. Matz with a pretty good ERA of 2.12. He's 2-1 on the season. Boy, that Met bunch has had so many injuries, and it's amazing. At this time of the year, they're always fitting Terry Collins for a necktie party. And after the break, they just seem to find their way, and they're starting to get a few people back. I don't know if they can win that division because the Washington Nationals are playing pretty good baseball. But if they don't get a closer, somebody might catch them. But when you look at the Mets, I think Atlanta has certainly had an impact, although they're two games under 500. But the Mets have enough experience, and if they get some pitching, they can make this thing quite interesting as far as the Eastern Division is concerned. So hopefully they'll get it started after the Cardinals go into New York next week. We'll take a break. The news is coming up in just a bit. We remind you, this is KMOX in St. Louis. I'm Mike Claiborne. It's sports on a Sunday morning. As we mentioned, Mozeliak, McClellan, and much, much more in the next hour. On your voice for the Cardinals, KMOX Radio, St. Louis.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.